good.
Jim was perplexed.
Blame you tell him, blame him, because there is no contract, right?
They have a policy that looks an awful lot like a union contract.
A good move on there.
Just called John, got it.
Tom's bringing a chair.
I'm sorry.
So the two chairs we took out?
Stop, go back, yeah.
Can we leave the door open?
I know.
Because it's an open meeting.
Perfect.
You need table space, I can sit.
Oh, no, 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 I didn't know I was coming in on this one, so I'm like, I just need to sit in the corner.
I want to sit in the corner.
Nobody puts Tom in the corner.
Just baby.
All right. We're here in our work session with Chief Matt Homick, Assistant Chief Yunker. I want to talk about just where we're going. All right, so with the hiring process, I know we've got the safer grant postings, and then have a little more discussion on the staffing model that we're currently using, and then how we move forward with fire protection.
Okay. Where do you want to start?
Well, I guess let's take the low-hanging fruit first, the fire inspection. Is that something we can do with existing staff, or?
We can certainly look at being able to get some of, we have several that are inspectors out there.
I want to back up for a second. What are we required as a township to do for the ORC as far as inspection?
We have to have the Prevention Bureau and fire prevention off the position filled.
Okay.
Whether that be designated to an individual as doing something, or that's a separate individual, that's just a position that's necessary. The township has to designate someone in that capacity.
Okay. Is that position, Dawn, defined in the contract?
The position itself is not.
Okay.
As fire prevention, there what was defined in the contract was the captain position.
Okay.
But the captain position was also something that was agreed upon that was going to extend eventually as far as the shift officers went as well. It wasn't just fire prevention. So if it is not an officer's position, we would just have to explore the option with the union of accepting the fire prevention officer with CERB as a position where they would add that into the union if they so chose.
Do you think that's a position that needs to be a full-time position, or?
If it was just inspection,
not without a firefighting or EMS responsibilities.
I think pretty much at least a 40-hour position it would entail because of all the work that comes through with the business pre-plans and your site plan reviews, the zoning clearances that they get, and then all the building regulation reviews that they have to do as part of the process. So when a new business comes in, or we have an existing business now that needs to update their fire alarm system add a new remote dialer into there, that has to be reviewed by the building department and the fire prevention bureau, and then there's final inspections. And that will happen for the fire alarms and the different situations. So it's kind of a Monday through Friday position during the business hours. So it entails, or it would encompass a 40-hour work.
Right. We have a job description and a posting ready to go for that.
We have the position. I know when I talked with Harold, there was some question about whether it was going to be an officer or not an officer. So what we have from when we hired Scott was the officer position. If we don't make it an officer, it's a minor tweak or change that has to do that. If we focus on them, their dual role, where they can we can still respond with us, as far as on the fire and EMS calls duties, or if we're not having them do that, that would be the only tweaking that needs to be done to it. But.
And the reason I ask it is just, you know, just trying to reimagine, I guess, for lack of a better word, firefighting as you know, with the challenge of just filling the shrinking pool of talent out there. I'll just say that.
Sure.
So if there's a person out there that says, hey, you know what, I got a bum knee, a bad back, I can't climb a ladder or hold a hose, break down a door, but I can do engines.
Mm-hmm. And that's happened, you know, in some departments. I mean, it's all a matter of how we structure it. As we're moving to the point of our, you know, moving away from the cross-staffing the vehicles and we're moving to staffing vehicles with the people on it, that becomes less and less important for us to have more so that dual role. But the dual, you know, it does help on the incident responses and the fill-ins that we do. But the primary function, you know, of that position still needs to be maintained. And as we increase on businesses, commercial occupancies, and that, it's all the more important that they focus on keeping up on all of that and keeping the flow of data that's changing when, you know, go out there and visit so we can update pre-plans so that the crews are informed about the changes happening in buildings and occupancies and businesses. And then we can stay on, you know, changes with alarm companies and any type of things.
So. Are there any opportunities for us to share services with any of our neighbors within that role?
I don't really fully think, only because each jurisdiction is tasked with being the authority, HJ, or the authority having jurisdiction. So right now, currently how we respond, and we have that swap of area around the airport and the port property with Springfield, where we're covering incident responses to some of the backside of the airport while they're covering the inside of the terminal. The area on the back on the port property is technically in the Swanton Township area that they cover. So they're the authority having jurisdiction as far as the fire prevention activities. So they have to do the fire prevention activities, but we're responding out there. So it's created some problems with us because when we encounter the same repetitive problem causing this nuisance alarm over and over again, and we keep, you know, pushing them to try to get that corrected, we're not getting it. So we actually had a meeting this morning with Springfield. They want to revisit that area and potentially look at upholding their part of the Swanton Township contract, and to basically take over the responses again in that area. I mean, that's fine as far as we'd have to work out the inside portion of the front. So I asked Administrator Grimm to sit down with him tomorrow and go through some of that so that we can see how we want to proceed next and keep you guys.
You say there's three departments that cover different areas of the airport?
So the Air Guard is the primary response on the airport property, but because they don't have transport capabilities, there's a jurisdiction that's assigned to go with them.
Okay.
Spencer is our border. So basically everything to the east of Spencer, and it cuts across the airfield and through the terminal building. Basically, yeah. White House Spencer comes
in. Clover.
Yeah, White House Spencer comes in pretty much from the TSA to the east of the TSA. So it covers the Port Authority offices, the banquet room they have there, all the rental car kiosks, and then the baggage claim area.
Subway.
And then the rental car parking lot, and then a portion of the long-term parking lot. Is how it draws.
So I think Chuck asked an interesting question. Can you contract that, or can we be the contracting agency? Is where I came after you answered him, because you're having a problem with not doing a good job in fire prevention, a nuisance alarm that could be corrected. So does Swanton Township need help? They don't have somebody who can do fire prevention?
They have, Springfield Township has that as part of their contract with Swanton Township.
They're
the fire prevention and fire response.
So really you should be talking to Springfield Township about solving the problem?
That's what we talked. We've talked over the last...
So Springfield Township can contract with other people, other entities, to take on... even a portion of fire service.
They have the fire and the EMS track for that area of Wanton Township. So they cover the fire and EMS responses, but also as part of that.
And they charge SWAN for that.
Right, yeah. SWAN Township, and they're responsible for the they're responsible for the fire prevention in that area. But there was an agreement that was made in the change, and we're looking at updating that agreement so that it's easier.
So yes, what I just heard from you is we can contract our services to other entities. Fire prevention.
Well, it's usually
maybe not singular, but a whole big contract.
It's usually part of a complete contract. Like
yep.
If we were going to cover,
got it.
You know, an area.
You don't
of
need
water
to say anymore. I got it.
Okay.
So, we have the job description. I mean, get this, I guess, posting out there. I would encourage as soon as possible, and then. Mm-hmm. See, I guess, what kind of response we got. My preference is I think we might get a better pool of applicants if you can say, hey, you don't need to necessarily jump on a truck or jump.
But we don't need to make it any type of requirement to be, I mean, they have to be a firefighter to be full-time.
Right.
As part of the fire department, but we certainly don't have to require it to have an advanced EMT or a paramedic license at that point, so. And then if we don't have them responding on those types of incidents, then we don't have to have, you know, that portion in there. We just have to have a certain, I mean, there are departments, Toledo has civilian inspectors. They're mostly retired or, you know, older fire guys that don't work for the departments anymore. And then, you know, some of the departments utilize some part-time
right. And
inspectors.
I think that makes a ton of sense if it's a 5-hour-a-week job,
yeah.
Right? And I find it hard to believe it's a 40-hour-a-week job. We're not Toledo. We have 100 businesses in the Judds. I can't imagine you can't get that job done.
We
can
have houses, though, too, that they have
in a part-time capacity, but I'm not arguing the point. Yeah. Just
so, you know, it could be full or part-time, and maybe we advertise it that way.
Or two part-timers.
Yeah,
or
and just say, you know, if it's not part of the contract, that, you know, the wage is negotiable based on experience.
So
yeah,
one quick question before you go on that. So, if you're a fire prevention officer, you don't have to be in the union, but if you've got a title, then the union would take that position into the union?
Well, the captain's position is recognized by CERB as part of the bargaining union.
Okay, but if it's just fire prevention, he doesn't have to be into the union like your other guy used to be that just retired like 3 or 4 years ago.
Correct. The fire prevention officer, if we put that title out there or that classification out there and create that position, that position would either have to be approached by the union or it would have to be petitioned to CERB to be added into the bargaining unit.
But it doesn't have to be if it's a fire prevention.
It doesn't matter.
Just a fire prevention officers.
We don't have that designation or classification.
Speaking of
so
the classification, I know the next question on Chuck's list is, have you worked with the union on your SAFER grant employees, that this is a grant that we very much hope to continue beyond grant time, but if it doesn't, and what was their response?
Yes, we had a labor management meeting more so to cover that topic, and I had given Lauren some information. She reviewed it. We drafted some language for an MOU. Their response from the union lawyers was that this is kind of unheard of because everybody understands SAFER grant is a SAFER grant, and so they were reviewing it, and I haven't gotten any back from them.
They thought we were being too cautious.
But they felt that it would be covered under layoffs pretty much, that if the fund, because
okay.
One reason for layoffs is lack of funding. So if the funding went away for the SAFER grant positions,
okay.
Then they said that was kind of standard
so
as
we
far
were just
as how they did. So
doing double work.
They have our documentation, our wording, and I'm waiting for a reply back from them as
Perfect.
Far as that goes.
Sounds good.
Where are we at with our applicants on that then?
Applicants, we've got the list of, I think there was 12 altogether. We interviewed because we had some applicants for firefighter full-time positions prior to posting the SAFER that were on our list, our eligibility list. So they were contacted basically again in the terms of the SAFER thing. We've interviewed them already, so it's been less than a year since we've interviewed them, so we have them on our eligibility list. We interviewed all the new applicants, which was there was seven that we did. And we have our committee basically putting together the recommendations for four names if we have four names. And I think we do have names. So.
Committee's youth three. And
Josh Stagner.
Josh Stagner from the union, one union member.
This might be an opportunity for me to just talk about the hiring process in general. I think the people that hire are sitting here. Coming, I have found recently, to a Board of Trustees meeting and asking me, I should be talking to you too because you would have to agree with me for anything to change, asking me to change, to vote on something thing is me just saying yes sort of randomly. I think we need a process where we see either the last three candidates who were, you know, in the final round, or we have a meeting prior to that vote where we discuss all the candidates, or we have something other than Jenny's the best candidate and we know it and we want you to say yes.
I would be the devil's advocate here. We've always said that we want to trust Harold's judgment, our chief's judgment, our maintenance guy's judgment. So you're saying now you want to reverse it?
I absolutely want to trust their judgment.
Okay.
I want to know more about the process that they go through. So they came up with the candidates. They interviewed the ones they selected, right? They didn't interview all 90 candidates. They interviewed 10. They narrowed it down to three, and they're picking the final one. I either don't want to be involved in the process at all and say yes to this person, and I don't know if that's legal or not legal, or I want to know about the final candidates. I'm not comfortable with the process as it's gone, and I don't know who I'm voting for. I don't even have their resume in front of me. There's not enough information for me to make a qualified yes.
Okay.
If you're asking, Barbara, you suddenly don't want to trust your leadership,
I said that's what you said. Right.
And I am saying totally trust them, but I need to know more about the candidate for me to say yes.
To go back to the supervisor's position, Carol DeI and Ken Booker were on that committee, and everybody disagreed with the trustee sitting in on that committee.
Absolutely. I'm not asking to sit in on the committee. I'm asking for a change in the process where I have seeing the three final resumes of the firefighter or the maintenance worker, where I have a meeting prior to saying yes, where it's discussed, oh, we saw these three people, they came from this area, and they just tell me about them. I don't feel comfortable in the public meeting asking difficult questions about a new employee, a potential new employee. So I could put people in a very uncomfortable position, and I don't want to do that. I'd like to be able to say yes based on information, not just on trust.
Just, and I'm just talking out loud here. So, yep. And I, if we had, okay, let's hypothecate and say you're presenting us three people to hire tonight. That I'm just hypothecating.
But I'm not asking for that. That's like an interview out in public. That would be
but
worse.
If on Wednesday last week we received their applications and resumes and just saying, hey, here's the three people I'm going to recommend on Monday night, you know, with confidential information obviously blacked out. So, I mean, it would be a public document. And then can call you, email you ahead of time. I mean, what's an appropriate amount of time? Just say, rather than, you know, we get your report at noon on Fridays.
Yep.
That's saying, hey, I want to hire these three people Monday, and we're like, well, gee, if, you know, you're off on the weekend or whatever. We want time to review them and just.
I'm always on though.
So I guess the question is, Barbara, we're going to review these resumes now. You might not like who the chief's going to pick, so who's going to decide?
Well, that might give him more opportunities to call him over the week, from whatever time period we get. If it's a week time.
I mean, we've had numbers as far as applicants, so we've been able to interview all of our applicants that have met the qualifications of the position. If they didn't meet the qualification, they were missing something, then
and you go through the interview process and you rank them.
I mean, just
this is my favorite, most qualified, least qualified.
Our last gentleman, I apologize for not remembering his name. Okay, why is he coming from Defiance to good old Monclova?
I mean, we're great. And I tried in the report when I recommended those. I tried to put a little bit of the bio and the information in there. I've always tried to include some of that in there so that you have more than just a name.
We don't have to get into it now, but just for us to have a conversation with that, it's like, okay, if it's a great job, I'll drive 40 miles for but it's a lateral move.
So I think the point is they've been asking questions out in the public that shouldn't be probably asked in public. Mm-hmm. I don't think Barbara's asking to say I'm questioning your decision, but I want to ask you questions not in public, just so they're informed on who they're doing. I think that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
Well, I did ask the question, how many runs Defiance have? There wasn't an answer. But they didn't know. So I could have asked that question the Wednesday before, and they could have found out and maybe done some digging.
205.
Yeah.
So I think that's the process. We want to trust your judgment, but for some of those things, because ultimately the three of us are responsible.
However we want to revise the process, I don't have an issue with that. I mean, when we have the need to hire, and we need through the process. I don't know if that's in the form of a public meeting or if that's in the form of the executive session to discuss that. However, the rules go for that. I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, we did do, you know, that when we did the original hiring committee, we had. For the full time with the levy, we had, I think, an executive session or two where we had the interview panel come and talk to you about some of the applicants.
Yeah, and we reviewed the whole stack. Yeah.
Or if we got your score sheets, you know, everyone's evaluated, and these are the scores the top three candidates got, and I knew why you liked Defiance so much. He got all fives because he was great list. But I don't know any of that, and I'm just saying yes arbitrarily.
We don't have a formal scoring system that's in place because that would be.
Well, you need to get one.
That would have to be something that we would have to include in you know our policy and procedure of the hiring process.
So going forward with any new hires, so when the committee, like I said, how much time would you? Trudy,
I don't want to be a slow up at all. So,
well, no, that's what I mean. So, if he's recommending something
on a Monday, yeah.
How much lead time do you need prior to that to ask any questions? Three days?
Yeah,
4 days,
I thought Wednesday
days?
Sounded reasonable.
Okay. So,
Trudy, you don't want to be involved in this process?
I'm
just
going to
trust the staff? That sounds good.
We're
I'm going to go with the resumes.
Okay, and you're a fire person, and you know which personnel, and you know
Absolutely not.
Technical license and everything are after their name and what they're qualified to do and what they're not qualified
to
do?
No, that's why I'm not on the committee.
But you're going to look at the resumes.
Well, I'm hoping to get a score sheet of how they interviewed and why they're the number one selection. And if I can't discern that for resume,
well, now
they'll need to help me.
We can do something with a scoring rubric or something. I just didn't know if that had to be documented as part of our process.
However, I mean, you're taking notes now, right?
Yeah, right.
And you're using your notes to make your decisions. So
it works fine.
We're taking notes
something.
And then we're meeting together as the group. Where we go through and we talk about each
I mean, if you came up with a 1 to 5 scale with 5, you know, 5 things, hey, you know, 8 certifications, you know, experience, proximity to the township, I mean, whatever, some of the criteria that you're doing informally now, and just structure it a little bit to give us a little more meat on the bone, per se.
I wouldn't think that would be too difficult to do. I mean, like I said, I mean, all the hiring has been either majority or unanimous as far as the committee members have been doing. So it's not like, you know, somebody got pushed out of the way, everybody was in favor of that, and the assistant chief said, no, I want this one, or I said, I'm the fire chief, I want this one. But that doesn't happen.
Not thinking it does.
I wasn't meaning that you were.
Harold said, and Buck said in the last meeting, this is really based on that hiring. And then Defiance happened right then, too, and I was like, what am I doing? Harold and Doug said, we said the same thing about every candidate. I want to hear what you're saying about them. so I have a basis, a more solid basis to vote.
Yeah, we can work to develop a process. I mean,
thanks,
if we look at their, I mean, we look at their resume, we look at their qualifications for the position, we look at past experiences, and then obviously how they do in the interview process. You know, the interview process.
Do we call for former houses that they worked out of?
We stopped the background checks ourselves. We had a period where the law director was doing them, and then we moved to corporate intelligence doing them.
Well, I'm not just saying background checks. It's just like references.
I don't know legally if you can do that, because if somebody calls and asks if somebody lives, the only thing I can do is tell them, yeah, they worked here.
They provide work history as well as providing personal, professional references, and corporate intelligence does do that. The problem you run into is both for them as well as for us, even when we did it, there is a point where, you know, I call ProMedica to ask about the medic that's working there, and their HR policy is
just
I can only provide
yep.
the name and the dates that they worked here.
Right.
Sometimes they won't even answer the simple question, mm-hmm. would you rehire them? Sometimes that's even a no answer right. question.
Harold,
because that tells you a lot.
On the bills, we paid for we reimbursed our employee for their background check, our new employee.
Right. Right.
Okay. So you asked for your own background check?
The FBI BCI background check, you're printing that gets done for the criminal check.
Okay.
That's done through the department.
That's corporate intelligence.
And we keep for that up.
Okay.
So they have paid for it and then
okay.
we reimburse
that. So out of those seven interviews, you expect to have three offers? Or four offers, you said?
We would expect to have between, well, the 15 names that we have, basically from the past eligibility list that we have that we've interviewed before and run through the process. So we're only considering the names that we've run through the process completely. So they've had background checks, interviews, and that done. Or, I'm sorry, they've had the interview process done and the resume reviews done. After we do the resume and then move them to the next level and the interview, that when we do the background checks. So, yes, we plan to be able to say that we should have four names to recommend.
And they're all cross-trained?
They are all cross-trained, yes.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll meet our March 31 deadline on that?
It's a little sooner than that, but
our March deadline.
Yeah, the mid-March for the performance period.
So that'll be the three safe positions in our current position that we still have one paramedic position?
It's a firefighter EMT spot that was open.
And then one other I wanted to talk about, just as far as our staff model, and I think we've talked about this a little before, but, you know, our goal is to roll with five, or go with five, but roll with four if we can't. You know, can we, you know, in...
Well, I mean, there's some qualification on that. I mean, because, so pre-COVID, we were three part-time personnel. 2020, with COVID, we went to four part-time personnel. Round the clock. 2022, when we passed the levy, we went to five staffing round the clock. And that was made up of the three full-time hires and the two part-time hires. When we lost those initial time or full-time hires, we lost three over the course of the year. That's when we talked about dropping from that five-person shift to the four-person minimum, so that, one, we didn't end up having to look for nine people instead of just three, and then also we kept down on the mandatory overtime. So we went to that. So we're at the five right now with the four-person minimum. We have all but the one position filled that's still open from the 2022. We don't have the last firefighter paramedic on board yet, but he's starting. He was the Alliance firefighter that ran it through over. So we have that aspect of the five, and then when we did the contingent offers for the paramedic-only position, that was when I explained we were looking to go to the six on the shift, and then we would have two paramedics. And then once we added the safer position, that takes us up to a total of seven on the staffing. And then that works us towards the goal of cross-staffing the vehicles any longer. Because with having to provide both the fire and the EMS apparatus on all calls, So a typical household EMS call, which we have, which again, I mean, it's 70%+ of our time. That's what we have. It takes the two on the ALS medic, but we have to have a paramedic and another level. Okay. Some of those calls, like say a pediatric cardiac arrest or even an adult cardiac arrest or difficulty breathing or something that turns into, hey, I need some extra help. It could be as simple as a life assist of somebody that's 400 pounds and we need to send somebody else there for. So we add some extra staffing that goes out. That's usually at a request cruise. It's not a design thing. And then we have all of our fire responses that require us to supply both the medic unit and a piece of fire apparatus, whether it be a brush fire, you know, a vehicle fire, a structure fire, a fire alarm, a hazmat, those type of things. So our fire staffing right now on the apparatus, whether it be the engine or the truck that goes, it's at three. Our brush truck only responds with two to like an outdoor fire or a grass fire, but often the engine goes with the supply extra water. So our fire response then also has to have, or a hazmat response, a response out to the airport for these aircraft incidents. It takes both an EMS staffing vehicle and a fire staffing vehicle. So we're at a five as where the minimum needs to be because of that aspect. We have three on the fire apparatus and two on the EMS apparatus. So that's the target to get to.
But I guess my question is, do we need that model 24/7? Are there times from 11
question.
At night to 10 in the morning instead
and
of having...
We ask for data on that question.
Yeah.
Sure. And I have some.
You know, can we...
How many brush trucks went out at
2
a.m.?
In the morning, yeah.
So here's the summary of EMS incidents for the 24-hour periods. And then at the bottom, it has a breakdown of fire runs.
For the last year?
This is from 2015 forward. So it has totals based on the hour per day. And then our staffing levels are listed at the bottom there of full-time or part-time.
Hour per day. So what's the middle of the night here? One, two, three?
Is it military?
Yeah.
It starts at 0:00, which is midnight.
So this is like the...
I mean, really, 2015, I mean, with the growth that the township is... You know, it's probably
that's what I'm looking
more
at.
Relevant from just like
it's broken out by year.
Post COVID.
It's broken down by year, so and then it's broken down within the year by each hour. But this is just EMS responses. Okay. EMS responses though, however, also include like the everything in what the NPERS type 300 is, which includes most of the rescue responses.
This is exactly how
so
you
accidents
did it, like
and those type of things.
70.
It doesn't have the fire responses on there. That's a little more difficult to pull out. The second sheet that I gave you gives last year's numbers, and
because that's a year.
I tried to break it down to simplify it a little bit to show you some of those fire responses and show you some of those responses, what it takes apparatus and personnel-wise for.
All right, Gavin, help me. In 2024, there were three per month. At midnight, there were three per month at 1 a.m. There were two per month at 2 a.m. There was
that's a total, and if you
so
extrapolate an average to
that's
that,
what he
right,
did.
Right. I mean, it could be that we may not
all
have
of it
any
happened
one month,
right. But. All of it happened at one time. Yeah. There's been a huge wreck, but that's just an easy way to imagine what you're saying.
Sure. And again, that only covers the EMS.
And
response.
Then at 6 a.m., EMS suddenly goes up.
We don't, but that's where we don't have in there, I don't have the fire responses. And fire responses are the more personnel intensive. So the second sheet, the longer sheet, that is 2024, broken down by the hour blocks. And what I included in that was a breakdown of some of the incident types with the personnel and LNS responses that you have. So on the left side, it is the incident types. It shows you that last one's overlapping incidents. I'll get to that one next.
Oh, you got handed out early.
Sorry.
This must be his. This is...
No, that you can, you're welcome to have.
I was just looking for one.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and I guess we're running short on time here. But I guess, and I'm speaking for myself, for what we talk about reimagining the fire department, how do we get, you know, without a drop off in service, the greatest efficiency out of your, you know, it's easy to just throw bodies at any problem, but we don't have an unlimited budget.
Right. Well, like I said, five is the ideal number because that gives me the EMS units and the fire unit staff for the responses. And then when we still have the off-duty response that happens or the pager actions that happen for our paper call and our part-time personnel to come up, other than for a household ES call. So if I get that fire call in the middle of the night, I'm sending five right away, and then I'm backfilling the station or backfilling that next responding vehicle because, like, a fire would take two vehicles coming out of the station here initially and then a third vehicle coming next. Some of the car accidents would take that same way where I need two on the ambulance first going out, I need three on the engine going out in case we have to do extrication, treat a spill, basically for traffic and control safety so that they can work in a protected area.
We get that, but we don't get it. But that's just way too much information. So this 1 o'clock, 31 EMS calls equals to 31 EMS calls, right? 31,
right.
31.
Right.
But then we had two fire alarms and one motor vehicle accident at 1 o'clock.
Correct.
Right?
From 1 to 2?
So I broke it down on there to include the separation between what takes a multi-vehicle response or a single.
That's for the year, right? So we had 31 EMS calls at 1 a.m. for the year.
Right.
And at 1 a.m., we had two alarms in one motor vehicle accident.
Right.
So from 1 to 2 a.m. for a year, we had 34 calls.
Well,
whatever
would be at this total.
It's 34.
At the bottom.
Not sure.
Yeah.
So, and of those 34 calls, 31 are EMS.
Right.
Okay.
And fire alarms aren't fires, correct?
They don't come in as a fire, but I mean they come in as an alarm. But it depends on what it
so
turns out to be.
When? How do I know in this line
if the alarm
which
is
a fire?
So the alarm is
that you had to hook up and hose off.
When we report the first thing that happened on the scene. So if it's reported as a fire alarm, it was not a structured fire. It was just a fire alarm.
Okay. Is there a?
If you go down farther, there's
one that says structure fire.
So if it says fire, if we said fire alarm, did a truck have to leave the station?
The truck typically responds with three people on that, which is what I provided in that column to the far side.
But did he say yes to that answer?
Yeah. Yes. So this
structure fire.
This is what would respond on a grass fire. The brush truck with two, the engine with three, and typically a chief.
So with the fire alarm, three people went out.
Three people go on a truck, great. And
even though it was not a structure fire, and this is how many structure fires we had each year.
You have to go out
well,
and
that's
a fire
just,
alarm
this is just
2024.
Off.
Oh, let's see if there's smoke from the
building
yet.
So if it comes in as a structure fire, but it turns out that it was actually only a fire alarm, it gets coded as a fire alarm.
Yeah.
So there could have been multiple vehicles that went out to it, but we found out that there was no fire. It was just a
I was just trying to clarify that. If the alarm actually meant someone left.
41.
Yes.
So like at my business, if I have an alarm that's a false alarm and they have to respond, I get billed. Do we bill people?
We do not currently
bill
for alarms.
Yeah. I get billed.
You'll see
if it's my fault because my alarm is faulty.
Oh, please. Bill us at the bank if one of the girls hit the hold up alarm.
You'll see at the very bottom. At the very bottom of that, it talks about wrong location, no incident found. Those are still calls that got dispatched, and we had a response.
Sure.
I don't have the data to tell you that that was an EMS call or it was a fire that got dispatched for. So to tell you whether it was one vehicle responding or five.
And I guess, and we'll continue to have this conversation. But what we would like, instead of that five, from that one to five, or, maybe that part-timer, goes home at 5 a.m. or whatever. How can we create efficiencies without a drop-off in service? I mean, realize that we don't want to staff. If we staffed and got 90% of the calls or 85% of the calls, you look at the, the fire alarms, from that one to six, there's, one. Two a month, maybe.
But see, I would, but that doesn't tell you that it's whether it's overlapping or not overlapping as well. So there could be an EMS come that's in progress when that incident comes in. So I have
right,
two
did
people
you go
out.
Through that? Actually, you had
so,
three overlaps on
yeah.
that sheet.
So there's the final sheet I gave you was overlapping incidents for 2024, and at the top it gives the number of incident responses that overlap for the whole year with at least one call. And then the next column, I broke it down.
Yeah. I just wanted to add to the record that this is the second time we've asked for this information, a creative way to look at the situation. And, Tom, the last time we talked about it, you said you were on board and would do your best to think about something. Maybe you have to come back and say, right, there is no creative. There you go, Trudy.
I said that I was all for it, but I just.
Tom did. You never have.
Yeah, I have said that I was all for looking at the staffing. But,
are you staying?
But my question is, when we went to the voters to tell them that, and now we're going backwards.
Not bringing up the levy.
But we're also talking about we're talking about lives and property here. It's different than a convenience store.
I don't want to miss any lives.
We're just saying redeploying resources. Maybe if there's more overlap between the day, maybe we have. You know, that person who's on from 11 night to 7 in the morning, maybe they're during the day today. That's what we're just, how get the best coverage and create efficiencies without, you know.
Yeah, and I'd be willing to talk more about it, but what I see as our best, our safest opportunity is the 5, because that gives us an EMS unit and a fire unit staff. And if we don't have that staffing, I have a delay in a response. And the delay in the response could cause life or property. And I don't know that I can stand here and tell you that just because we have three of our runs that happen on that time, that 3% would be acceptable to me. It would not be. And I don't know that it should be to you either.
Well, and I guess maybe there's some additional information about, you know, what are best practices throughout the state. You know, not just saying, hey, I understand not living with 3%. You know, 3% of plane crashes, you know, the world be, or 3% of our water supply was contaminated, that'd be a problem. But, you know, realizing with staffing issues, budget issues, all, you know, what is the standard best practice for the state of Ohio or Lucas County? Or, you know, what are other people doing?
Yeah, I mean, and that comes to some of that NFPA recommended staffing goals and different things like that. Like I said, the NFPA recommends 4 people on it.